Walk across the courtyard towards the library. I can hear the insects buzz and the leaves beneath my feet.
Hello, Kodiak. Welcome to another episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA. I'm Athenia Large, chair of the Kodiak Public Library Association and host of your show. May is a wonderful month for the Kodiak Public Library Association. We have a lot of events happening that we want to tell you about later on in the show. But first up, we have our Beyond the Cover segment with Tayton, where he's interviewing Sarah Lowen. You may know Sarah Lowen. She lives and works here in Kodiak, and she's here promoting her contribution to the book Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project. Sarah contributed an essay called The Story Continues to the Made in Salmon book, which is a collaboration of over 50 Alaskan writers with short stories and anecdotes about salmon. Today on our show, Sarah talks with us a little bit about that book, about her life in Kodiak and out at the fish site on Amak Island, and she also reads an essay for us that she's written to give us a little bit of an idea about what life on Amak Island is about. Lori Madsen from the KPLA board stops by to give us a quick little tech tip about how to use the resources at the Kodiak Public Library to their fullest potential. We appreciate that. There's a lot of events happening in May that the Kodiak Public Library Association is part of, and I'm happy to tell you about those a little bit later in the show. And in fact, we have Bob Ross and Penny Boucher stopping by the studio to talk a little bit more in depth about Bob's workshop called Drawing for Shy People that started last Thursday and is running for the next 10 weeks. At the Kodiak Public Library. We have some book reviews to share with you in our Community Roar segment of the show. We've got a review of Miracle in the Andes and a review of a Stephen King novel, so stick around for that. And I want to give you a little bit more information about what we're doing for the annual Crabfest book sale that goes on at the end of the month during Crabfest, of course, at the Kodiak Public Library. It's our biggest sale of the year and a great opportunity for you to come out and get a book at a very low price. We sell the children's books for 25 cents each. Paperbacks are $1 and hardbacks are $2, so come down to the Crabfest book sale and check out those books. And then stay tuned at the end of the show. I'll give you some information about that and let you know how you can donate books to the Kodiak Public Library Association if you've got some ones on your bookshelf you don't need anymore. So stick around for this fantastic May episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales. Let's get it started now with Tayton and Beyond the Cover.
What is it inside our head that makes us do the opposite? Makes us do the opposite of what's right for us.
This is Tayton, and welcome to Beyond the Cover, our segment in Dog-Eared Reads where we'll talk with authors, musicians, and other performers coming to or living in Kodiak. On today's segment of Beyond the Cover, we'll chat with local Kodiak, Alaska author Sarah Lowen. Born in Kotzebue, Lowen grew up in Noatak, Old Harbor, and Kodiak. She studied journalism at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, earned a degree in elementary education, and then taught in New Mexico and Washington before making her way back to Alaska. She earned a master's degree in creative nonfiction from University of Alaska Anchorage's Low Residency Program and settled back in Kodiak, where she now lives with her husband and three children. She currently teaches preschool at St. Mary's School and works in the Kodiak College Library during the winter months. She and her family live and fish during the summer at their Setnet site in Uyak Bay on Amak Island on the western side of Kodiak. Lowen has been published in newspapers throughout the state, and in 2011 wrote a monthly column for the Anchorage Daily News. Her first book, Gaining Daylight, Life on Two Islands, published in February 2013 by the University of Alaska Press, is a collection of personal essays that, as she describes it, weaves Kodiak history and natural history with personal narratives about a year divided between two islands. Gaining Daylight won the Willa Literary Award for Women Writing the West in 2014. More recently, Lowen contributed an essay titled The Story Continues to Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project, a collection which includes essays and anecdotes about and by over 50 Alaskans to, quote, celebrate the fish that holds a central place in the lives, cultures, and values of those who depend on salmon for food, livelihood, recreation, and sense of community. Along with Lowen, there are a number of Kodiak contributors, including Leslie Leyland Fields, George Gatter, Aaron Harrington, Sarah Harrington, and Mark Widevine. Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project is available for purchase through the University of Alaska Press bookstore and coming soon to local booksellers around Alaska. Sarah Lowen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
To start us off, tell us a little bit about the Salmon Project and how you got involved.
All right. Well, I was invited by the editor, Nancy Lord, to read a nonfiction book by David Montgomery. It's called King of Fish, and it's a look at the history of salmon. And then to think about it and write an essay that would run in the Alaska Dispatch as a series. There were 10 writers, and it was a series of essays just kind of exploring our connections to salmon and the way its importance in our lives.
How long did that series run then in the Alaska Dispatch? Do you know?
I think it was over a series of months in the springtime, and then that came the core of the book.
So I'm looking at the list of Alaskan authors, right? And as the description says, there's over 50 Alaskans who contributed to this, some essays, some anecdotes. And again, the title's Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project. And Kodiak is quite well represented. What is it about Kodiak that attracts or produces such prolific writers and artists?
Well, I think we have a lot of great material in our choice of a home and work, and then really interesting people who make up the community. I think a lot of artists have maybe more adventurous stories than mine, but there's a rich history here that I find inspiring, and just all the natural beauty too, and getting outside just sparks stories.
It's the Emerald Isle.
Right.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the book?
Yeah, so it was published by the University of Alaska Press, which makes beautiful, beautiful books. It's got photographs inside. It has snippets of life from people all over the state. It has some really wonderful Alaska writers with some longer essays. And it's just, I've heard it called a love letter to salmon. And it's just showing the many facets of and all our connections as Alaskans to this fish.
I really like the cover. Can you describe it for us?
Yeah, there's a girl who's done a fish print, and she's wearing, you know, a hooded sweatshirt and holding up this gorgeous fish print. And then throughout the book, I believe it's Clark Mishler took the photographs. There are different types of salmon fishing, both commercial and subsistence. And yeah, it was just an honor to be included with so many good writers and to get to reflect on something that's so important in my own life and to our state.
Other than the Kodiak authors that we talked about, are there any others included that stuck out to you that readers should look for?
Well, a few writers who've even come to visit Kodiak in the last couple of years are in here. Heather Lenday and Rich Chapone and Charles Wolforth, who writes for The Dispatch. Dan O'Neill has been to Kodiak to give a reading. So I think people will find a lot of familiar names and voices, and also neighbors.
So in the winter months, you're a teacher and a librarian, and then in the summer, you and your family fish using set nets. For listeners out there that might not be familiar with set netting, can you describe what it is, and then maybe share a little bit with us about what appeals to you about the set net fishing life?
Sure. Well, set netting varies by bay and by areas around the state, but in Kodiak, your nets are attached to the shore, and they can extend out about 150 fathoms. Into the path of migrating salmon. And then people tend to go out on daily picks that vary on the amount of salmon that are in your nets. And you take skiffs out and pick the fish one by one and then deliver them to a tender, which takes them to the cannery to be processed. And then come back to your cabin for meals and to sleep at night.
How long is the set net fishing season typically?
Right. Okay. So it runs June through September. And for us, where we live, we own the land we live on. So we built our own cabin and we fish in partnership with my mother-in-law and my father-in-law. So it's a family business. And it's a wonderland for our kids. They love it. They've already started asking every day when we're going to go out there. And it's a beautiful place to spend the summer.
So I understand you brought an essay to share with us, A Changing View, the Seasonal Migration of a Fishing Family, so we can learn a little bit more about the set net fishing life and the life that your family has.
Yep, I'll go ahead and read that now.
Thank you.
When river otters moved under our cabin on Amick Island last winter, they tunneled oily dens through piles of insulation ripped from above. There were so many when Peter first crawled underneath in May, they seemed to scurry out from every other piece of lumber. We had to burn the scrap wood and bleach the smell from the kayak they designated a latrine. Our dogs refused to go near the crawl space all summer. The otters were reluctant to leave, even after Peter put a stereo under the cabin and blasted Metallica at full volume. For the rest of the salmon season, whenever those otters swam past our beach, they eyed the cabin as if they were just biding their time until they could reclaim the pink fiberglass palace they'd made under there. It's hard to be uprooted. Even after 10 years of set net fishing in Uyak Bay, it's still chaotic moving every spring from the town of Kodiak to the cabin on Amak Island. Last summer, we watched a rabbit trying to swim across Uyak. Lots of things swim for miles across the bay. Herds of deer, mountain goats, families of bears. But it's the image of that sopping bunny, which kept circling back toward the shore before setting out again, that captures the frenzy of relocating. In the days leading up to our first salmon opener in June, we close up our house and ship a summer's worth of supplies to the west side of Kodiak. Peter flies out early to unload shrink-wrapped 500-pound pallets and take the skiffs out of storage in Larsen Bay, the village closest to our fish site. He onboards the cabins and connects water lines and starts hauling out fishing gear and anchors. When I follow a week or two later, it's easy to fill up a 6-seater mail plane with two boys and a baby, two dogs whining in their kennels, totes of groceries and garden starts, one goldfish sloshing in my lap. Peter's parents have spent the last 43 seasons salmon fishing here. In a doorway of the old cabin at their site, I can trace Peter's pencil growth through all the summers of his childhood. Going back to the cabin each May is a way of marking time. For 35 years, Jan and Pete Sr. shared a 24-by-24 cabin and an outhouse with the crew. Now they have a house with indoor plumbing. Solar panels have quieted the droning of generators running for hours. Before we were married, Peter would skiff into Larsen Bay late at night to call from the cannery payphones. Now there's a cell phone tower in the village and internet at most fish sites, with Amazon's free shipping available for hardware and outboard parts. When we built our cabin, we were the same age as our crewmen. Now they're still 20-something, eager to upload photos or videos to prove they're salmon fishing in Alaska, and accidentally using up all the bandwidth in the process, which leads to unpleasant confrontations that ruin lunch, and I question why we've chosen a livelihood that makes us strangers and family, all of them sharing every meal and almost every waking hour. By the end of the season, everyone's relieved to leave, the same way you appreciate your health after the flu or mobility after an injury. Town promises different faces, takeout, central heat, and water pressure. Peter says it's the changing tides and weather patterns and catch that make salmon fishing interesting. But those same elements snap anchor lines and drag sets and clog nets with seaweed and jellyfish instead of salmon. Storms keep skiffs on the beach when nets are full of fish. It's easiest to love this livelihood when the fishing is good, but pulling hundreds or thousands of salmon from the nets 7 days a week for 10 to 18 hours a day is hard on a body. Come September, we're tired of the constant maintenance of motors and skiffs. Some seasons, salmon fishing feels like that old joke about farming, what you do between breakdowns. Some years, it's all work and too few fish to pay for it. Heavy fishing is what we're always hoping for. And when it happens, Peter's euphoric, and I realize I've inadvertently been wishing myself more solo parenting. This is the point in the summer when I'd really like to meet a friend at the park and vent about the imbalance of fishing demands on family time, and by the end of our conversation, I'd be over it. But when Peter's alarm goes off at 5 a.m., I ask myself if I'd really rather be the one pulling on wet rain gear in the dark to pick the nets, and I get over it. I remind myself of those things the fish site nurtures in our kids: curiosity, flexibility, and a kinship with the natural world. It helps to see each season with the mother's eyes. All these days, not sharing the kids with schedules, classrooms, homework, and friends. No phones ringing and nowhere we have to be. We can read 6 chapters of Harry Potter in one sitting and finish half the series in a summer. Living remote makes it easy to let all else fall away. There's a family down the bay from us with sons who've grown up fishing here. I've always thought of the brothers as a kind of preview of what's to come, with their rope bridges and Swiss Family Robinson tree houses, and summers of archery and axe tossing and cliff jumping. One year, their gear shed became a dodgeball court after hundreds of Nerf balls washed up around Uyak when a container ship lost its load in a storm. The boys seemed so perfectly suited for set netting that I was surprised to hear that one brother was anxious to leave the fish site last August. He was missing his girlfriend. That's coming too. Those years our kids would rather spend time with other people instead of with us. But not yet. Not now. On any given morning, our boys putter down the beach, filling buckets with eels and tide pool creatures. They chop pushki with knives their papa dulled for them. They beg to ride along when Pete picks the nets and return from delivering salmon to the tender with pockets full of candy. They build fires. They pee outside wherever they want. Their cousins arrive and Papa hands out jelly beans during coffee breaks. They don't bathe for days. This is the life, our six-year-old declared, a line borrowed from his grandpa on his first day back last summer. Setnetting has given my mother-in-law 40 summers with her twins and her daughter Carrie, who brings the grandkids every July. When she isn't cooking, Jan plays rounds of Scrabble with Peter's sister Jackie, who still picks a bouquet of wildflowers for her mom's birthday in August, like she has since she was five. Peter's parents, our partners in this business, are in their 70s. It's not possible to picture the Fish Site kitchen without Jan in it, or to listen to the VHF without hearing Pete Sr.'s voice on it. The steady rhythm of days out here sometimes fools me into thinking that seasons in UYAC will continue like they always have. We have a secondhand trampoline where our boys spend countless hours bouncing against a changing view. Humpback and fin whales, sea otters, eagles, sea lions, and seals. And on rare days, the shimmering white peaks of mainland Alaska across Shelikof Strait. From here, the contour of mountains across the bay is as familiar as running a hand over your old dog's back. Most evenings before bedtime, I watch the boys leap into the darkening sky, though already I'm seeing the scene as a photograph. The only way to hold them still in that moment, in their focused delight at how their bodies move through the air, as if it's the easiest thing in the world to be soaring and rooted in a place like this.
You're listening to Beyond the Cover and Dog-Eared Reads on KODK 90.7. We're talking today with Kodiak, Alaska author Sarah Lowen, whose most recent work includes an essay published in the collection titled Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project. And she just shared with us A Changing View, The Seasonal Migration of a Fishing Family. Sarah, thanks so much for sharing that essay with us.
Thank you.
I love the opening scene with the river otters having taken over the crawl space under the cabin. Yeah, it just seems like a very much a Kodiak and an Alaska story. In this essay, and I think a lot of your work, reading Gaining Daylight, as well as your essay, The Story Continues, published in the Made of Salmon book, there seems to be a common thread of fishing and family, right? A lot of your stories have your husband and your kids in them. Could you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how fishing first came into your life and family?
Sure. Well, I was born up north because my parents were teaching there and we lived in Kotzebue. And so I think my first fishing trips, I was tied onto my mom's back underneath her parka when she would go ice fishing. And then in elementary school, we lived in the village of Old Harbor here in Kodiak. And we had an old skiff, and we went out every, you know, afternoon that we could and weekend, and that was how we filled our freezer for the winter. And I used to think at that time, I loved the salmon fishing, but halibut fishing I thought was a little bit boring as a kid. But now that I have my own old little skiff in the summer and I take the kids out, I sort of love that peaceful time of just sitting and listening to their conversation. And I'm kind of proud because I can bait a halibut hook while nursing if I have to. I enjoy being able to do that with the boys. And our 8-year-old is fanatic now about fishing. So it's fun to be able to also have a role in helping him do this thing that he loves.
So what was your first introduction to set net fishing?
It was really marrying Peter. But I also had some great friends, the Myricks, who were in Uganic. And I had visited their fish site. And it was interesting to see that there are different types of sites. There are sites that are small where there's a lot of free time for reading and drinking tea, which is lovely. And there's also bigger operations where it's pretty intense and it's definitely a business.
So is yours one of the bigger sites or the little sites or something?
It would be. It's our major work. So there's always the challenge of trying to balance that. And that's in this essay, but it's in a lot of my writing too. I think writing towards the gratitude for all the good things that come along with some of the hardships too.
Right. So a common discussion around Alaska right now has to do with the aging fleet and how to get younger generations involved. I was wondering, do you see a place in the fishing industry for your kids if they want to pursue it when they grow up?
I do. I think I worry more about ocean acidification and warming water temperatures. That's something that I worry a lot about.
Those are major issues and discussions going on right now.
Yeah, I think that's part of this salmon project too, to try and think about the future of this wonderful resource that we have as Alaskans that we're so lucky to have.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's switch gears there a little bit for the writers out there listening. Do you write while you're out at fish camp in the summer amongst the thick of fishing season? Or do you wait for the winter months? Can you tell us a little bit about your process and how it all comes together?
Ooh, it's for me right now at this stage of my life, it is a piecing together of time. And I love research. I love reading for projects. So I try to consider that part of the process and not get too, I would say where I am right now is just trying to find a balance of family time and writing time, and to enjoy the family time and know that hopefully in the future there'll be more time for writing. So I write in snippets, I write in paragraphs, and just try to, I guess, keep thinking about it, even if there are big divides in the time I can commit to a writing project.
So you have any advice out there then for any would-be outdoor writers, people who love the outdoors and fishing?
Just to read. There's so many wonderful Alaska writers to read for ideas. And then something I've been so grateful for is this community in Alaska. And I think you can find those people, find your people at some of the conferences in this state, like the Kachemak Writers and in June, and then Sitka also has a conference. I think it may be in May. But I think if you reach out to other writers in the state, you'll find that they're extremely supportive and just good people.
And those conferences are open to anybody then?
Exactly.
Cool. Well, are you working on anything new at the moment? Anything you can tell us about?
Well, I've been freelancing for the Alaska Dispatch. They have a magazine called 61 Degrees North. And it's just a fun, they usually choose a different theme in each issue. And they try to find kind of quirky or unusual communities or events or people to write about. So sometimes they'll ask me, the most recent one I did was, can you find a young Kodiak kid who's grown up in fishing? And so that's kind of fun to be given a story and then to pursue it and write it. So I feel grateful for cool. that opportunity. Yeah.
So where could people find that work when it comes out?
Well, it's always online. And then they also included the magazine with the, like, this last Sunday's dispatch paper.
Well, Sarah Lowen, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Lowen's first book, Gaining Daylight, Life on Two Islands, and her essay, The Story Continues, published in Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project, are both available through University of Alaska Press, as well as other booksellers around the state. You can learn more about the author at www.sarahlowen.com. That's SARALOEWEN. This is Tayton. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Covered and Dog-Eared Reads. Until next time, happy reading.
For this month's tech tip, I'd like to introduce you to a good tool to navigate Kodiak Public Library and its resources, their website, city.kodiak.ak.us/library. From their homepage, one can find the monthly calendar of library events, search the catalog to find materials, and you can reserve materials too if you know your PIN and your library card number. And you can also access the databases that are available. You can learn about the services that the library offers, reserve library facilities and study rooms, and learn about the history of the Kodiak Public Library. From the Useful Links tab, you can find a link to Listen Alaska and other resources that are available from the State Library, like SLED. And you can also search the Kodiak Daily Mirror and other U.S. newspapers from the city's library's website. Another great resource for the do-it-yourselfer is ARCC, the Auto Repair Reference Center, with manuals for just about any car available in the U.S., reaching back to the 50s. For example, I found a resource manual for the 67 Volkswagen, as well as a 2014 Subaru. This very extensive resource is free and available on the public library's website. Again, the URL is city.kodiak.ak.us/library. Your key to information here in Kodiak.
Thanks so much, Lori. That was Lori Madsen from the Kodiak Public Library Association with another tech tip for you to help make your Kodiak Public Library experience even better. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA, and I'm Athenia. The Kodiak Public Library Association is excited for May. We've got a lot of fun events happening. The Aleutic Museum is coming to the Kodiak Public Library to offer the Maritime Story Share. That's happening this Friday, the 13th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the library. And if you like storytelling, galley tables, this is going to be right up your alley. It's just a marine theme. We're very excited to have that. Galley tables is such a wonderful event in town. People really seem to like the storytelling, the Dark Winter Night storytelling event that happened over the winter here at the Kodiak Public Library by the OWL Online with Libraries program. It was also a very successful event. So we know that you people in Kodiak like storytelling. You should definitely come out and try this maritime story share. Again, that's the 13th, this Friday at 6 to 8 at the Kodiak Public Library. The library is also screening The Fast Runner for their foreign film series. That's happening next Friday, the 20th at 6 p.m. That's a great movie. If you haven't seen that one, that's a good time to check it out. We have Stacy Studebaker on May 21st. She's coming to the Kodiak Public Library and offering a full-day workshop on useful plants of Kodiak. This class size is limited and it does cost $10 to register for this event, but again, it's all day long. It goes from 10:30 in the morning till about 3 in the afternoon, and it's kind of going on in two parts. In the morning, you'll be at the Kodiak Public Library for a classroom session where you talk about identifying some plants, you talk about identifying poisonous plants, maybe talk about some fun ways to use the plants, nutritional information, maybe some recipes, how to add them to your diet. And after the classroom session, there'll be a small break for lunch. And then in the afternoon, Stacy Studebaker is going to lead you out into Kodiak and show you where those plants that you were discussing actually can be found around town. She may be driving to some of these events, and she's encouraging classroom participants to carpool if they can. So if you know of some friends that want to attend this with you, it's a good idea to organize that with them beforehand. Like I said, this is a full-day workshop, so you might also want to bring some lunch for the break in the middle of the day. Of course, bring your camera and a notebook and good shoes, appropriate clothing, all of that sort of thing. If you have questions about this workshop and want to talk to Stacy, you're welcome to call her. Her phone number is 486-6498. If you want to register for this event, contact the Kodiak Public Library. Their number is 486-8686. Again, this workshop is happening on Saturday, May 21st, from 9:30 in the morning to about 3 p.m. It costs $10 for this event, and the class size is limited to 20, so you really want to register for this event now if you want to attend it. Stacy is also offering a discounted price on the textbook that she'll be using for the workshop, which is her book, The Wildflowers and Other Plant Life of the Kodiak Archipelago, a field guide for the flora of Kodiak and South Central Alaska. You probably know that book. It's been around for a while, and it's on many a bookshelf in town. Normally, she sells this book for $25, but if you're attending the workshop, she's going to be discounting the sale of this book down to $20. So it's also a great opportunity to pick up a copy if you don't have one, or if you do, maybe pick up a copy for a gift for somebody else. The Kodiak Public Library Association is very happy to be working with Stacy Studebaker again. You may remember that she did a book signing for us back in late fall of last year with her recent book, Octopus in the Outhouse, the children's book. So Stacy's a wonderful writer and a great member of the Kodiak community, and we're so happy to be able to be offering this workshop with her again now for you Kodiak residents. So get out there with Stacy and check out the local plant life of Kodiak. You can register again by calling the Kodiak Public Library at 486-8686, or just stop by the Kodiak Public Library and mention it to one of the librarian assistants at the circulation desk. The very next day at the Kodiak Public Library, Jordana Long is offering the Shakespeare Reading Circle. Jordana is a member of the Kodiak Public Library Association board as well. We're so happy to have her on there. This, however, she's doing in conjunction with the Kodiak College. And this is a Shakespeare Reading Circle. It's the second month she's done it. Last month, she did it right at the end of the Shakespeare Celebration Week that we had in honor of Shakespeare's birthday. So it was a fun time for all of the participants, and Jordana's carrying it on. So this month she's doing Much Ado About Nothing. If you are interested in this event and happen to have your own copy of Much Ado About Nothing, that would definitely be a help to bring that along, but there'll be a few copies there available if you don't have your own copy. If you like Shakespeare, if you like reading aloud, if any of this sounds interesting to you, please come out to the Shakespeare Reading Circle happening Sunday the 22nd of May in the Kodiak Public Library. Also happening throughout May is the Drawing for Shy People workshop with Bob Ross, which actually started last Thursday, was the first week. This is a 10-week workshop, so it's going on for the next couple of months, and it happens every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. This is a free event, but registration is required, and we're hoping that this event will build such interest and enthusiasm that we'll be able to offer it on another day of the week or time for those that aren't able to make the 6 to 8 on Thursday time. But I'd like to introduce Bob Ross and Penny Boucher here into the studio so they can chat with me a little bit more about this workshop. Take it away, Bob.
Hi, I'm Bob Ross. This is really a pleasure to be here today. Both Penny and Athenia have volunteered to model for my classes, and so that's going to be just an outstanding thrill. Drawing for Shy People. You assume that, I don't know if that's for me or not. I don't know if I can really do that. It's a little uncomfortable. You're the kind of person I'm looking for. One, if you can write your name consistently, then you can draw. So I'm not really going to teach you how to draw, but I will expose you to a number of different drawing techniques and push your comfort envelope to where hopefully you'll be less uncomfortable taking your sketchbook to public, and even at some point showing your drawings. Sketch art is kind of a quick and dirty. It's what you've brought with you, what you're using, and you've got limited time to do it. And so there's lots of different drawing materials that are faster than others. And once you become comfortable with them, you can just do some outstanding things. Your subject matter is really anywhere you are. Anything that appeals to you is suddenly your subject. But the real focus of this was to develop a core group of sketch artists for galley tables, a kind of a takeoff on them. There you've got 7 speakers, 7 minutes, and 7 stories to capture. And it's really a hoot. If you're in the drama pod, you're really packed in like a sardine. You have to get there early if you want to have the seat of choice, and you never really know what's going to happen. And those stories are great. If you're in the theater, well, when they drop those lights, it's dark out there. And so you want to get a place a little bit closer, or you want to have some very bright paper and some very dark ink so that you can kind of draw in the dark. And so, again, every theater, every event offers a different requirement. We're in a sports town now, and all those sports events are just really thrilling to go to and to try to capture the event or different people from the event. So, again, I think that this is going to be really fun, and it will push some envelopes, and both Athenia and Penny have never modeled before, and it's going to push their envelope to have us be focused on them for that period of time. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm very nervous. Bob has been kind enough to tell us that this isn't the typical modeling for a artist that you would expect. We're not lounging and sitting in one position for an hour. He's allowing us to move around. And in fact, he's encouraging us to move around. So I think I'm going to bring my marimba in and maybe my fire spinning so that I have something to entertain myself and you sketch artists with while you're trying to draw me. I'm going to be on the move the whole time. Penny, what are you going to do when you model?
Well, I'm going to be bringing my son, so I am also going to be on the move and very excited, and it's definitely out of my comfort range, which is what Bob's goal is, is to just bring people out and have them challenge themselves. And if anybody's seen Bob's drawings, they tell a wonderful story, and tying this into galley tables and trying to get a group together to draw at galley tables is just so appropriate for what he does. His sketches are amazing. And a picture really is worth a thousand words.
It's true. If you've been out to Galley Tables, you may have seen Bob Ross. If you've been to some of the library events, you may have seen Bob Ross. He's the fellow with the sketchbook and the bag full of colored pens. So I want to take a little moment here and give Bob Ross some credit for the amazing sketches that he's done so far. I've seen some of the sketches that he does at Galley Tables, and he's got this wonderful technique where he sketches in those very tight 7 minutes a sketch of the person telling a story, and then in the week after Galley Tables airs, he actually fills in the other half of these pieces of paper with a little bit of context of what the story is about. So it's almost like half the page is the person telling the story and half the page is their story. It's kind of a little bit more abstract and really quite beautiful. So Bob has laid them out here in front of us. And one that's specifically drawing my attention is the runner one. So he's got a close-up of his speaker, and then on the other half of it, it's like a marathon man with a time clock behind him. And it's really got a lot of impact. These are fantastic drawings.
Well, the concept behind this started out with Eleanor Ramos giving me a very tiny sketchbook, and one that I would never even have considered using before, but it's perfect for when they're having Galley Tables in the drama pod, because you're packed in like sardines. And you've got 7 minutes for your speakers. The sketch that Athenia was referring to has, now I'm not real good with names, but it had the speaker who was telling us about trying to break the 4 minute mile and how he came so close for so long. And he ultimately saw that 4 minute mile broken, and for his son to be the first from Alaska to break that 4 minute mile. And though he didn't break it himself, he was ultimately the man behind the record breaking. And so it was, the sketch was just kind of drew itself, really. But it's got the Energizer Rabbit in there and the Mad Hatter and a few other things that just kind of flowed from the story in my mind. Not everyone that sees these sketches, especially if they're the person that I drew, would probably agree with the high praise that I'm getting for them, but I have fun. And that's the idea behind sketch art. The more you do, the greater the practice you have, the easier it is to do. And ultimately, you're going to get one sketch that is going to look like the person, and hopefully then all is forgiven for all of the ones that don't.
What do you think, Penny? I think these are pretty accurate sketches of the people we see at Galley Tables.
I think Bob's being way too modest. They're stunning. He's very talented, and we're very lucky that he's teaching this class and for free.
Like Bob says, this is just a matter of practice, and 7 minutes isn't a lot of time, but maybe if you've taken 10 weeks worth of a workshop class, you'll have some skills behind you where in 7 minutes you really can capture the essence, not necessarily the specific details of a person's features, but the essence of their story, the essence of their personality. And that shining through is more important, I think, than the details. I think Bob's drawings really are representations, really good representations of the energy people have.
Well, thank you for those very nice words. Did I mention this class is free and that it's being supported by, well, besides myself, the facilities at the Kodiak Public Library are just outstanding. So if you've ever had any interest or desire to become a sketch artist or to at least find out what sketch art is about, come on out and we can certainly expose you to this form of art. There's a sign-up sheet. We would encourage you to sign up because that tells us how many people to expect. But there's a second reason, too. If I happen to get over 40 people, then I'll break the class into two, and I'll make an accommodation for those that just can't make that Thursday evening class. The idea is not to turn anyone away. And if you are, again, young, if you're middle-aged, if you're old, it doesn't matter. As long as you can sign your name consistently, you can draw. And I hope that we'll give you your full money's worth.
That's not hard, seeing as this event is free. So here's the other thing. They want you to register for these events, but you don't have to commit to everyone. If that's difficult for you, if you can't make every week, that's fine. You can just come for one. But if you are really interested in expanding your skills as a sketch artist, then ideally you would come to all of them. They started last week, May 5th, and it goes on again this Thursday the 12th, next Thursday the 19th. There's actually 10. So this is going to go on for a while. Every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. And so register for ones that you can make. If you can't make all of them, that's totally fine. If you can make all of them and want to make all of them, then it's even more important for you to register so that we have an idea of how many people are going to be going from one to another.
Since I'm assuming that I'm dealing with shy people in that I don't see many people carrying their sketchbooks around and drawing at public events, I've made this so that I'm going to be giving you lots of classwork, lots of homework, but you don't have to show any of it.
But if you do want to show your work, we would love to see it. And hopefully we would love to display some of it after the event is over at the Kodiak Public Library. But no pressure, because if you're a shy person, this is the class for you.
And the library is just very excited to host Bob. He's one of our most regular patrons. He comes to a lot of our events. For him to be hosting his own event is so exciting. And we hope to see you there.
That's right. So again, if you're interested, go down to the Kodiak Public Library, register for these events. They're happening for 10 weeks on Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. This is the Drawing for Shy People class with Bob Ross.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for coming in, Bob and Penny.
Thank you, Athenia.
Now, I'd like to get to the Community Roar segment of our show. The Community Roar segment is where we rave over amazing reads, and you have a chance to share with me and the rest of Kodiak what you've found fascinating and interesting to read lately. I'm always looking for more book reviews, so if you're reading a great book and you want to share it with me, please call me. My phone number is 539-7660. Again, my name is Athenia. You can also email me at the Kodiak Public Library Association website, which is kpla.alaska@gmail.com. Just shoot me an email and let me know that you have a book review, and we can arrange a time to meet at the studio and have you record it. You can always also record it at home on your own device as an MP3 or a WAV file, and then email it to us at kpla.alaska@gmail.com, and we can get it on the radio for you there. If you like what we're doing here at Dog-Eared Reads and you want to help out, we would love to have that as well. If you have a great idea or know an author personally, specifically, we like to have authors that are from Alaska and Kodiak, and you'd like to do an interview of an author for us, or you'd like to participate in another way, helping out either on air or behind the scenes with Dog-Eared Reads, again, email us and volunteer. We would love to have your help. You can also visit our website, www.KodiakPublicLibraryAssociation.org, and on there you'll find a lot of information. We've got our upcoming events there. We've got a volunteer registration form if you're interested in volunteering with the Kodiak Public Library Association. We've got all the contact information for all the board members. You can find a lot of information about the KPLA there. You can also find out information on how to become a member of the Kodiak Public Library Association if you're not a member already. Membership also expires every year. So if you haven't re-upped your membership lately, that would be a great opportunity to do that, to become a member of the Kodiak Public Library Association. You can always stop by the Kodiak Public Library to pick up a copy of the membership form there. You just fill it out and mail it back in to us, and that's all it takes. We value your membership support. Your Kodiak Public Library membership helps us to support the Kodiak Public Library with the Kitchen Gardener series, with the library film series. We're always offering these events and workshops. We're very happy to be able to help the Kodiak Public Library with a lot of its programming, and that in large part is because of the support of our membership, and we really appreciate you. Now, let's get to the Community Roar segment of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales, where we rave over amazing reads. James Rains has the first book review for us today. He's reviewing a Stephen King novel. Take it away, James.
The Bazaar of Bad Dreams, a terrifying anthology of short stories by the master of horror, Stephen King. Released in 2015. Stephen King has done it again. He has put together a series of short stories that will shock the deepest and darkest parts of your soul and challenge your core beliefs in the areas of morality and mortality. The stories connect through a series of themes including the afterlife, guilt, morality, and the things people would do differently if given the opportunity to change the past or know the future. One story tells of a young man who has the power to kill by his written word. Another story describes the cruel fate that awaits a man and his dog at the end of the world. Each story is a world in and of itself, and unlike some of his other works, you get a front seat tour of each story from the king himself as he introduces each story with a description and his motivation for writing it. I would like to start by saying this. I am a huge King fan. I have read nearly all of his works. I especially enjoy his anthology of short stories. However, I found myself struggling through this particular book. I preface this by stating that I did not, as a King fan, read the synopsis of the book. I saw it had come out, I saw it was from the King, and I checked it out from the library before they even had time to put the protective cover over its sleeve. That was a mistake. For those of you diehard fans who do not read the cover of your favorite authors, I would caution you. This book is an anthology of horror fiction short stories, but some of those stories have already been published in earlier anthologies, so not all the stories were new, which was frustrating. All the main characters of these short stories are believable, but not just believable, they are relatable. Stephen King uses character development like a surgeon uses a scalpel or a fisherman uses a net. It's his greatest strength, his greatest talent. And these characters faced a myriad of dark things that live just beyond our lucid understanding of reality in that gray metaphysical area of our dreams and our nightmares. Murder, lust, fear, pain, suffering, the what-ifs and the could-have-beens. I would have to say, though, that my favorite part of this work is the Dark Tower Easter eggs. If you are a King fan, and maybe if you aren't, you've probably heard of or have read the epic Dark Tower series, which describes the journey of Roland Duchesne of Gilead and his quartet. And you probably know that King loves to write in cameos of these characters into other works that he writes, as well as taking characters from some of his more famous works like Salem's Lot and adding it to the Dark Tower series. For those of you who read lots of Stephen King's works, you can often find these hidden Easter eggs that describe or relate to the Dark Tower series. It reminds me of the Marvel movies and sitting through to the very end after the credits to see the small short reel that will describe or relate to other Marvel movies or upcoming films. For this anthology, there is at least one of those Easter eggs that describes the workings of the Dark Tower and those who serve it. Unfortunately, this has not been my favorite King book, but that is no fault of his. As I have said before, I did not read the synopsis to know that some of the stories had already been published in other works, which I have read. So if I were to change anything about this work, I would have taken out some of the already published stories and filled it with just new works. But with that being said, I would recommend this book to anybody who wants to give themselves a dose of what nightmares are made of. This book is not for the faint of heart. It is, as said before, the bazaar of bad dreams, by the master of horror himself, Stephen King. And this review has been brought to you by James Rains and Dog-Eared Reads, sponsored by KPLA.
So my name is Leanne, and today I'm going to talk about a nonfiction piece by Nando Parado and Vince Rouse. It's called Miracle in the Andes. Miracle in the Andes is a story about Nando, when he is a young man, a teenager really, at the end of his high school career. He was on a rugby team called the Old Christians. He's from Uruguay, and they were headed to a rugby competition over in Chile. On their plane trek, twin prop plane to get over the Andes, they ended up in a pretty horrific crash. The crash itself is the focus of the book. And the survival, they managed to survive 65 days out in the Andes Mountains. And they think they're at 7,000 feet. It turned out they're really surviving at 14,000 feet with almost no supplies to begin with. They have very little to eat. They figure out how to melt snow for water, and then they have to make some very crucial and brutal decisions in order to keep surviving. Nando himself tells this story. This story has been written about before, called Alive, I think, is the first publication of the story. But Nando decided to write about it because he felt like his friends had been portrayed in an unfair light. And so as he tells the story, he talks about what got him through and motivated him to walk out of the Andes Mountains to the west and down into Chile, which resulted in their rescue. I found this story incredibly difficult to read. I wept, for sure. It's very real, and it's brutal at times, but it's also amazing. Nando's focus is not on the horrible things that happened, but on the faith that helps he and his teammates ride through. I think the most beautiful part of the story actually is the conversations he has with one particular individual about God and God's purpose. And I would recommend this story to anybody who's interested, first of all, in rugby, because it has a lot of really cool stuff about rugby, or car racing, because it does talk about that later. But mostly it's something that I think people who have experienced any sort of survivalist kind of trauma, boat accidents, hiking accidents, anything along those lines, it's truly inspirational in that he can recognize how important faith was to him and how his faith was so drastically different from others. So that's Miracle in the Andes by Nando Prado and Vince Rouse, and it was published on May 9th of 2006.
Thank you, Leanne. Thank you, James Rains. It's always nice to have Kodiak community members helping me out with the Community Roar segment where we rave over some amazing reads. And if any of you out there are looking to give me a book review, if you've read something fantastic lately and want to share it with me, I encourage you to do that. You can email me at kpla.alaska@gmail.com, or you can call me at 539-7660, and we can discuss a time to meet at the radio station and have you record your review. You can always also do it yourself at home on your device, save it as a MP3 or a WAV file format, and then email the file to us, and we'll try to get it on the air for you. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the Crabfest book sale coming up at the end of the month. The Kodiak Crabfest book sale held at the Kodiak Public Library is an event we've been doing for years now. It's our biggest book sale event of the year. You may notice that occasionally throughout the year, we also go to the Kodiak Island Brewery and set up temporarily there, but the Kodiak Crabfest book sale is our biggest book sale of the year. We try to get almost every book we've had donated to us over the last year out there, so there should be some good fresh picks for you if you decide to come out to the Crabfest book sale. It's going on for the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of Crabfest this year. So Friday, the 27th of May, it's happening from 12 to 8 p.m. That's the big full day sale. That's the best time to come and check out all the books before they've had a chance to be looked over by everybody else. On Saturday, the 28th of May, the book sale will be happening from 12 to 5 p.m. And on Sunday, the 29th, the book sale is happening from 1 to 3. This is a great chance for you to stock up on your books for the summertime. The children's books are 25 cents each. It's such a great deal. Paperbacks are a dollar and hardcovers are $2. We will also, of course, be having sales themed sales of some of our books that don't always move so quickly. So the romance novels, the science fiction novels, maybe some of the westerns, we'll have those on sale for massively discounted prices, a dollar a box style prices. So if those are the kind of books you like to read, you definitely want to come out and let us know, and we can probably find a whole bunch for you. We'll be advertising our theme sales on our Facebook page throughout the event. You can also pop onto our Facebook page to check out some pictures of the event and what's going on with it. It's a pretty fun time. So check it out. And if you want to donate books for this event, if your bookshelf is full or you have some books that your kids aren't reading anymore, we would love to have you donate them to us. Year round, Cost Savers is kind enough to allow us to have their place be a book donation drop-off point. So you're always welcome to donate books at Cost Savers. And through the month of May, in preparation for our annual sale, the Kodiak Island Brewery also has a book donation drop-off bin there, so you can leave books there. You can leave books at the Kodiak Public Library as well, but for both the brewery and the library itself, that's a better spot if you just have a couple of books to drop off. If you have a lot, if you have boxes boxes and boxes of books, please bring those to Cost Savers and they're able to handle them there and get them to us. We really appreciate every donation you guys give us. There have been some amazing books that have come through in the last year, and we're really excited about the books we're able to offer this year at the sale. The reason that this sale is so successful for us every year is because of the great books that we have donated by the people of Kodiak. So please give us your books if you're done reading them, and we'll get them out to somebody else in the Kodiak neighborhood who likes that kind of book too. Book sales are also a great opportunity to get out and see other members of the Kodiak community, other people who are reading. There's usually always some little chats going on at the book sale about what good books are and what people like to read. So if you're the kind of person that's an avid reader and loves talking about that kind of thing, this is a social event as well. Please come out the 27th, 28th, and 29th of May at Crabfest, up at the Kodiak Public Library. So the 27th from 12 to 8, the 28th from 12 to 5, and the 29th from 1 to 3 p.m. The Crabfest Book Sale. It's a great event. Please come check it out. And if volunteering at the Crabfest Book Sale is something that would be interesting to you, we're definitely looking for volunteers to help us man the event. You can contact us at kpla.alaska@gmail.com, or you can call me, Athenia, at 539-7660 and let me know that you'd like to volunteer at the Crabfest Book Sale, and we can get you on the schedule. It's pretty easy to volunteer for this event. Mainly, it's just a matter of walking amongst the books and helping us organize them and browsing through them. So if you're the kind of person that would like this sale, maybe you'd like to volunteer for a couple of hours and browse while you help us. Well, thanks for listening to Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA. Though we're about at the end of the show now, I'm Athenia, host and producer of Dog-Eared Reads and chair of the Kodiak Public Library Association, and I'd like to thank you for listening to Dog-Eared Reads. I'm going to end the show today with a little song from Stacy Studebaker. Stacy Studebaker is at the Kodiak Public Library on May 21st, teaching a workshop on useful plants of Kodiak. It's a full-day workshop that runs from 10:30 in the morning till about 3 in the afternoon, involving classroom time, discussing and identifying plants, as well as outdoor time, actually getting to see those plants in their natural environment. This workshop costs $10, and you can register for it by calling the Kodiak Public Library at 486-8686. If you're out walking around at this workshop or just in general and want to know how to mind those bears, this is a great song for you. Here it is, Hey Bear, Ho Bear by Stacy Studebaker's band Waterbound. Thanks for listening to Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales, and happy reading.
When I'm hiking in the woods and in the bushes to one side, I hear a scary noise that makes me wanna hide. My heart rate jumps to double and my senses come aware. Is it a fox, a deer, a moose, a weasel, or a bear? When you're going on an outing in the land of bear country, you need to have an attitude to proceed respectfully. For after all, those bears were there before we came along. So when you're hiking through, you need to sing this little song. Hey bear, ho bear, what are you gonna do? I'm here, you're there, I'm just passing through. Hey bear, ho bear, it's such a lovely day. This is your land, I understand, so I'll be on my way. Or a place to spend the night, be sure you're off the bear trail, or you might get quite a fright. Keep your food wrapped up in plastic and away from where you sleep, or a hungry bear might think that you are something good to eat. When I'm hiking down a trail and come upon a giant scat, I look at it and pray to God I don't end up like that. If it's still steaming, I hike faster and usually won't stop. For I think about the food chain and I know I'm not the top.